Yeah. So, as Ali has already said, and as you can see behind me, the title of my paper is Porous Sovereignties, the Geopolitics of Anarchism, or as an alternative title, the Political Geography of Anarchism. So this is still, this is the disclaimer, this is still a work in progress, so I have not even decided on a specific title yet, but this is pretty much what I'm aiming at. So, the paper's main objective is that I would like to intervene into the discourse of classical geopolitics. And I would like to do this, I would like to perform this intervention by means of phasing in a different understanding of space and order into this very specific discourse. An understanding of space and order that is eventually based on an anarchist reading of authority or more notably power. And in this regard, I would like to refer to Proudhon's concept of social force. But before I can explain to you how I intend to do this, how I intend to perform this intervention, I guess I need to provide you with some context and explain very briefly what classical geopolitics is, how the discourse looks like, what it does, and of course what kind of problems I have encountered, because I take it that not all of you are IR and geopolitics specialists. So classical geopolitics is basically built around a triad that comprises of space, authority, and territory. You can already see this behind me. And what this triad signifies is that space, that means political space in general, and geopolitical space in particular, is always conceptualized through some kind of geographical lens. So that means space is first and foremost understood as territory, and vice versa, territory is constitutive of space, is constitutive of geopolitical spaces. Authority, so this would be the third element of the triad, is then understood as the ability to manage political space and to exercise control over certain territorial entities, like the modern nation state. And that's also the reason why geopolitical thinkers, such as Mahan and Mackinder and Haushofer, and as we will see later, Barnett, for instance, why they use concept with an explicitly territorial and geographical connotation. So they talk about land power, they talk about sea power, pivot areas, cores and gaps, and things like that. So the main objective of my paper is now that I would like to intervene into this discourse and arrive at a broadened understanding of how geopolitical space is made, how geopolitical space is constituted. And the main argument is that a more comprehensive understanding of authority and eventually of power would allow the geopolitics discourse to conceive the emergence, but also the existence, of non-territorial political spaces. So the working hypothesis that underpins my paper is eventually that notions of space and notions of order in geopolitics are functions of power. And this is pretty much the core thesis. Yeah. So if you would like to write down one sentence, basically the condensed version of the presentation, it would be this: like, notions of space and notions of order are functions of power. So what I say is that power and authority function in this case as an epistemic lens, as an epistemic lens that impacts on how the geopolitics discourse understands the ontology of political spaces. That means how space is, how political space is constituted, and who constitutes political space, how political space emerges, how it is sustained, how it declines, and last but not least, how it is visible in international affairs, and more importantly, what kind of political spaces are visible in international affairs. Is it only states, or can we go beyond a statist narrative? So my hypothesis is that classical geopolitics is trapped into a quite narrow understanding of how power works in international affairs, and that the discourse focuses predominantly on compulsory and, to a certain extent, institutional forms of power. And the problem that emerges is that if the discipline frames power mostly in compulsory or institutional term, you also buy into a very specific understanding of what political space and eventually order signifies in international affairs. So in terms of sovereignty, for instance, if power is understood in primarily compulsory or institutional terms, you also need some kind of a central figure. You need a Leviathan or a prince or something that monopolizes power, that wields power, and eventually directs power. In terms of order, you are inclined to arrive at a quite centralized, a quite hermetic and spatialized vision of order in international affairs. So, bottom line, you can say that notions of order and concepts of sovereignty are functions of power. And different types of power, like the awareness that there are different types of power, enable, in this case, the geopolitics theorist to conceive order and sovereignty in geopolitics differently. In the final part of my presentation, I will explain how a non-territorial vision of space that is based on Proudhon's notion of power as social force could eventually look like. And this is my concept of my not fully developed concept of porous sovereignties which oppose coercive sovereigns, such as the modern nation state. But before I can do that, I need to show that this assumption that classical geopolitics sits in some kind of a power trap which impairs its vision, that this assumption is well grounded. And so what I did for the better part of the paper is that I looked into the writings of four prominent geopolitical thinkers. I started with Ratzel, so this is a German text, Anthropogeographie, published in the late 19th century. Then I moved to Kjellin, also one of the classics, published in the interbellum period, 1920s around, Der Staat als Lebensform. Then I moved to Barnett, The Pentagon's New Map. This is a more recent text, 2004. And last but not least, Brzezinski's Strategic Vision, also a quite recent publication, 2012. So what I wanted to know is, how do these authors, Ratzel, Kjellin, Brzezinski, and Barnett, how do they understand agency and, more importantly, power in international affairs? And how does that impact on their framing of order and the ontological constitution of the international? And, to present the results, I eventually found that all of these authors under review mobilize predominantly compulsory and, to a certain extent, institutional forms of power. And eventually, they arrive at a very centralized and a very discrete vision of order in which geopolitical space, international political space, is always constituted by some kind of compulsion-wielding agent. Unfortunately, I can't really go through all of these writings due to the time constraints. I would need another 20 minutes, and I guess you're not happy with that. So just to pick one example, Barnett, who is really the most extreme example in this regard. Barnett sees the international as being populated, dominated, but also constituted by what he calls a gap leviathan. And this this gap leviathan acts as a guardian of globalization. The main purpose of the gap leviathan is to force integration. So if you are not really happy to join economic globalization, the gap leviathan comes and, well, makes you to want. We're, of course, talking about military force here. So the gap leviathan is basically the embodiment of military force. So most importantly, Barnett's vision of international affairs, that means his understanding of how geopolitical space is constituted, relies eventually on a compulsory understanding of authority and eventually power. And so I have to say this again, I have to reiterate this. This is not an accident. Yeah. So this runs like a red thread through all of these writings. From Ratzel, who published in the late 19th century, to Brzezinski, who published in 2012. All of these authors, they rely on compulsion as a mechanism to constitute geopolitical space. So, What I suggest in the final part of my paper is that geopolitics should mobilize an anarchist concept of authority, and that this very orthodox discourse might benefit from mobilizing Proutant's concept of collective force, collective reason, and power as agglomeration and commutation. So what I suggest, in short, is a move towards constitutive, towards productive, and perhaps even biopolitical elements of power. So the last question to be answered is then, how does anarchism support geopolitics in reframing sovereignty, order, and most importantly, space? And I've already demonstrated this, that this reliance on compulsory forms of power leads into a rather violent understanding of sovereignty. It leads into a very centralized vision of order, and it leads towards an ontology of space that is full of binaries. You're always thinking in terms of like inside, outside. You think in terms of domestic versus foreign. You think in terms of order, domestic order versus international anarchy. If the discourse would, however, understood authority in terms of or power in terms of collective force and collective reason, which exist by virtue of agglomeration and commutation, it would arrive at a very different understanding of how order, sovereignty, and eventually space looks in international politics. So in terms of order, we then need to abandon this kind of, let's say, system narrative. That means the illusion that the system can be managed by compulsory means and by some kind of a centralized force, let's say a Leviathan or a Gap Leviathan. What we get instead is a Risen-like structure, or what Hart and Negri have called the multitude. So in this case, the international doesn't really have a beginning or an end. There are no straight paths, and there is no center and no periphery. There are some authors who would say the international vanishes entirely. I wouldn't go so far. But what I'm saying is that this this hermetic closure between domestic and international becomes at least blurry or porous. So most important in this case is, of course, that space is then not constituted by immanence. It is then not constituted by transcendence, by some kind of transcendent actor, such as the Gap Leviathan. But political space is eventually constituted by an immanent movement. So international politics is eventually the result of a, you might call it, a bottom-up movement. It also implies that within this rhizome or multitude, sovereignty gets a very different meaning. And it's not longer understood as some kind of punitive power that means control, juridical power, or compulsion. But sovereignty is now structural power, it's productive power, and it's the ability to constitute, to maintain, and to change, to permanently change newly emerging geopolitical spaces. And these newly emerging geopolitical spaces, they are, again, clusters of collective force, they are clusters of collective reason, which exist by virtue of commutation and agglomeration. So last but not least, in terms of ontology, we then get an international that is constituted by capillaries, again, by collective forces and by collective reasons, which can be political, but don't really have to be political. They can be social, they can be economic, and they can be linguistic. So another binary, this hermetic entrenchment of politics breaks down. Politics is not only politics, but it can also involve the economic and the social and the linguistic. And again, these clusters that emerge, they are porous sovereignties because they initiate a moment of inertia on this plane of immanence. So if the rhizome or the multitude is the totality of biopolitical forces, and if these forces are constantly interacting and reproducing, and if they are clashing, then sovereignty in this setting is eventually the ability to achieve, at least for the blink of an eye, a slowing down of this movement. So the rhizome or the multitude, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't really crystallize. But what we have instead is a very, very fragile and temporary material and ideational consensus. Or we have newly emerging non-territorial geopolitical spaces. Geopolitical spaces that are constituted by what I call a porous sovereignty. So, thanks a lot for your attention, and of course I'm happy to get feedback and questions and whatever.